Les colloques du Collège de France.
Good morning, bonjour. Thank you very much to Cyril for the introduction, and before that to Nathalie, both for the introduction to the whole symposium. I think you set the scene very, very nicely. And also for the invitation to participate in this symposium, particularly here in the Collège de France, which is a great privilege here to talk in front of such an audience in a college with such a history. So I'm really looking forward to the whole day, because as Nathalie mapped out for us, we are going to look at a topic, health inequalities, which is really my favorite research topic, and we're going to look at that topic from many different perspectives. So the organizers gave me the task of taking an economist's perspective on causes of health inequality, and I'm always a little bit apprehensive when I get this role of playing the economist, because I'm sure that many of you will be familiar with the old quip about the number of opinions exceeding the number of economists in a room of economists. So we can imagine that views of economists on causes of health inequality probably diverge quite a bit. And actually, even if we just take out the health inequality and we just think about views of economists on causality, then I think we would get different views. So if we look at contemporary economists, or you might just say young economists, then their view might be that, well, simply causality is what economists do. That's it. End of story. Nothing else. And a chauvinist economist's view might be that, causality is what economists do better than others. Yeah? And some of you might think, well, you can just leave out the adjective there because that's just what the economists think. Yeah? A smug economist's view might be that causality is what I identify from my ever so clever strategy. I'm a clever boy. I am. Whereas a skeptical economist's view might be that causality is what I partially identify from a less dubious strategy. So my point here is that I am invited to give an economist's perspective. I'm going to give you this economist's perspectives and my views on causes of health inequality. I'm going to be a bit more specific than causes of health inequality. I'm going to look at causes of socioeconomic health inequality. So what do we mean by that? We mean differences in health by some socioeconomic characteristic. So for example, if we take a population and we divide the population into those that have, well, we don't divide it, but we have within that population people that have a high level of education, that's people with a university degree. I'm taking a guess, that's most of us, it's perhaps all of us here today. And we also have people who have the lowest level of education, that is people that have no more than compulsory education. And we look at their life expectancy from the age of 25, then we do that over many countries, 21 OECD countries here. Then we see for females, the high educated females, they can expect to live more than 5 years than their equivalent females who are lower educated. And for males, that's a difference of more than 8 years. And that gap has increased by about half a year for both sexes over the period running up to the data that I have here in 2016. Another example here from the United States. Here we're looking at differences not by education, but by income. And so on the horizontal, what we have is different positions in the income distribution going from on the left, the poorest percentiles, to on the right, the richest percentiles. And what we're seeing for males, a male in the poorest 1% of the US population can expect to live no more than 73 years, whereas a male in the richest 1% can expect to live more than 87 years. So about a 14.5-year difference in life expectancy between the top of the distribution and the bottom of the distribution. For females, that's a difference of 10 years. And again, if we look over time, we see that in the US, these gaps in life expectancy by income have been increasing over time. And I say gap, but for this graph makes it very clear that it's not just a gap, it's actually a gradient. We see that life expectancy is increasing, it appears continuously, with position in the income distribution. Now, that study has been, it was a very famous study. It's been replicated in many countries, also here in France. And we can see very similar thing. So here we're broken down by ventiles of the income distribution. So if we're comparing men in the top 5% of the income distribution, they can expect to live for about 84 over 84 years, whereas men in the bottom 5% of the distribution in France can't expect to reach 72 years. So again, huge differences, slightly less differences for females, but they are very marked. Now, those are all differences looking at life expectancy. They're coming from differences in mortality, but we could look at many different dimensions and measures of health, and we will see these socioeconomic gaps or socioeconomic gradients. So here, I'm just giving you one example. This is from many European countries, but I've highlighted here for France. This is from the age, people who have reached the age of 50, and we're looking at how many years they can expect to live without disability. And if we look for males in France, we can see that a male in the high education group could expect to live for another 21 years without disability, whereas a male in the lowest education group could expect to live for only another 15 years without disability. Yeah. So this is sort of the subject matter of my talk. And though I gave you a few descriptives, but we could go on, and Natalie also gave some descriptives. It's clear that health inequalities are substantial, they're ubiquitous, and they are persistent, and perhaps even increasing recently. Now, the story usually continues after having seen these differences, that in order to reduce these inequalities, we need to know what causes them. And for us as researchers, that's a very useful inference to make. It motivates many papers. It is used in many grant applications, and it's very effective in both of those roles. And what I want to encourage you to do in this talk is to just question a little bit that inference, whether that really holds. And I'm going to do that by addressing three questions. One, what do we know about causes of health inequality? What can we know about these causes? And what do we need to know about these causes? And very, very briefly and way too crudely, my answers to these questions are going to be that we don't know that much, we cannot expect to know much more, and that's both of those answers are a bit pessimistic, but my third answer is, I think, rather optimistic, and that is that we don't need to know as much as we think we need to know. So the negative answer to the first two questions might not be quite the obstacle we think it is to reducing health inequalities. Okay, so I'm going to be drawing on a lot of evidence from studies, and I'm not really going to show you much of that evidence at all. If you're interested in it, I've got a couple of reviews that I've written in the last year, and you can find them in these papers. Okay, so first question, what do we know about the causes of health inequality? Now, first thing to recognize is that we cannot know anything for sure. Health inequalities emerge within societies. They are not controlled, so we're never going to know for sure how they emerge, where they're coming from. So what can we do? We can use some theory, we can draw on theory, and we can make inferences from data. And so my question is a little bit more specific. Using economic theory, because others are going to come after me and use theories from other disciplines, but I'm going to try to draw on some economic theory and causal inference, that is statistical causal inference. What plausibly causes socioeconomic inequality in health? That's my question. And then actually it's a little bit more specific. So I'm just going to focus on differences in health by education, income, and wealth. But one of my arguments is going to be questioning whether that is enough to take each of these socioeconomic characteristics separately. And I'm going to focus just on high-income countries. Okay, so theory. Before I go into the theory, I want to just sort of a little preliminary here. Natalie also already mentioned the Black Report and then the WHO Commission on the Social Determinants of Health. And in that literature, basically the public health literature on socioeconomic determinants of health, usually there's a distinction between three sets of theories. And these are usually identified as material, behavioral, and psychosocial. So the differences in health are result from socioeconomic differences in exposure to material determinants, behavioral determinants, and psychosocial determinants of health. Now, from an economics perspective, I think this is a little bit difficult, because when we think about behavior, we normally think about three sets of factors determining behavior. And those would be constraints, so resources, including like material resource constraints on our decisions, our preferences, what we like, and our beliefs, or if you like, our expectations or our risk perceptions. Yeah. So models usually, you know, have these three components, and from these three components, we explain behavior. Now, if we take that perspective, then this division between material theories and behavioral theories, it becomes a little bit more difficult, because I think from our perspective in economics, we would see that behavior is partly determined by the material constraints. And I think it's important to make this point, because sometimes the behavioral explanation is sort of criticized because it's saying, well, it's blaming people for their preferences, for what they're choosing to do. From an economics perspective, we would not recognize that, because we see, well, people are making choices subject to constraints, and they make adopt certain behaviors because of those constraints. Yeah. Okay, now, theories, economic theories for the determination of health by socioeconomic characteristics, I'm not going to go into any detail here whatsoever. I'll just point out we could take a number of different theories within economics. Let's say we even take the most extreme one, where we assume that people are rational and they value their health, and they also produce their health. And they produce their health by combining goods that have an impact on their health, like healthcare, most obviously, but also nutrition and exercise, etc., and their own time, which is used up in consuming those goods to produce health. If we take that broad framework, then from that framework, we would get predictions that higher educated people will have higher health. And why will they have higher health? Basically because, the theory would say, they're going to be more efficient in producing health. Why are they more efficient in producing health? Number of different explanations, but basically the idea would be they're going to be better at absorbing information and using information in order to improve their health. Would be one sort of mechanism there. Income and wealth, they would also be predicted to impact positively on health. Why? Well, basically, if you've got more income, you've got more wealth, you can afford these factors which determine health, like good nutrition, you know, time to exercise, etc. But also, and perhaps a bit less obviously, if you've got more income and you've got more wealth, then perhaps the cost to you of producing health is going to be lower. Why is that? Well, what's the cost of producing health? The cost of producing health is giving up other things in order to devote time and resources to produce health. But if you're high income, then you've got a lot already of these other things. And at the margin, we would say those things are going to be less valuable to you, so you're prepared to sacrifice more of them in order to get more health. Yeah, so sort of the preferences shift towards health at higher income and higher wealth. So basic point here is that theory would predict that we're going to have this positive impact of the socioeconomic characteristics on health. Now, also theory would predict that health is going to impact on each of those socioeconomic characteristics. Ill health can interfere with the acquisition of education. It may also impact on incentives to acquire education. If you think that you're healthy and you're going to live for a long time, you've got a high life expectancy, you've got greater incentive to invest in your education, because the returns on that can stretch over a longer period. Also, health, pretty obviously, can impact on income. It can curtail productivity in the labor market. It can reduce the amount of time that we have available in order to work in the labor market. And through those mechanisms, it's going to reduce our earnings over time. That could lead to less savings, less acquisition of health. And ill health could also deplete that wealth, because if you're living in a country where there's not universal health insurance coverage, if you get sick, you need health care, you're going to have to pay for it. That's going to deplete some of your wealth. So again, we would expect there's going to be impacts in that direction as well. And the theory would also tell us that there's going to be other factors which are impacting in both health and they're impacting on the socioeconomic characteristics. And so these are going to be things like genes, they're going to be cognitive ability, parental investments, time preferences, personality, lots of other third factors or confounders, if you like, that are going to be impacting on both health and the socioeconomic characteristics. So that gives us a problem when it comes to the next step, which is getting evidence. Because to get evidence on the causal relationships, we need to control or we need to somehow remove the impact of these third factors, these confounders. And there's various ways that we can do that. And what I'm going to do here is summarize the evidence from what I will subjectively define as well-identified studies. Studies that convince me that they've done a rather good job of dealing with these confounding factors. Yeah? And if I restrict the evidence base in that way, then my extremely crude summary of an awful lot of evidence produced by a lot of hard work for people around the world would be this, the evidence on a causal impact of education on health is ambiguous. So a question mark here basically means that we can find studies that seem to be have done very well. We can sort of, they've got credibility. Some of them find an effect, others don't find an effect. You know? And part of that is going to be heterogeneity that we'd expect, you know, differences in types of education, differences in types of health, differences in contexts where education may be expected to have an effect or not have an effect. Part of it is that heterogeneity. But even if we look within the same country, within the same variation in health and education, we can get studies, some of them that find impacts on health and others that do not. Yeah. So I would say that the evidence there is ambiguous. With respect to the impact of income on health within adulthood, so this is changes in income within adulthood, does that impact on health within adulthood? I've got a red cross here indicating that I can find no what I would class as a well-identified study that is finding that impact. Yeah. Alternatively, impact of income on health in infanthood and in childhood, then I think we can find studies that find variation in health and income when in infanthood or even in utero, and then impacts that variation in income has on health in childhood and perhaps sometimes even going on into adulthood. And wealth on health, again, the evidence is ambiguous. Sometimes we find an effect, other times we don't find an effect. Now, I had this red cross for the impact of income on health in adulthood, within adulthood. A few years ago, I might have put a question mark there. This study has sort of convinced me that perhaps I should put a red cross. So it's a fantastic study. It's done a randomized controlled trial where they basically randomly give people more income. So it's done by Sarah Miller and others, Miller's at Michigan. So what they do, so the population is lower income young adults in Illinois and Texas. Yeah. And this is, it's a randomized study. These are people who are lower income, so they're no more than 300% of the federal poverty line, but they're not on means-tested benefits, so they're not the lowest income. But at baseline, 29% are uninsured, 27% report that they've foregone healthcare because they could not afford it, and the majority report no better than good health. So there's sort of a margin here, you would think, in this population for income to impact on health. What do they do? The treatment group, they give them for 3 years each month $1,000. Yeah. So that's a big increase given that they are lower income. The control group, they get $50 only for 3 years. They measure many outcomes in health. So got many measures of physical health, measures of mental health, healthcare use, health insurance, out-of-pocket spending on health, and health behaviors. They've really done a fantastic job and being comprehensive in the measurement. So what do they find? For the physical health measures, they get a precisely estimated null effect, no effect, that they're fairly confident is no effect. For the mental health indicators, they find in the first year, more income does reduce stress, does reduce mental distress, but it only lasts for the first year and then dissipates. For healthcare, they find that the treatment group uses more hospital care. Strangely, they use more emergency care. They spend a bit more out of pocket on healthcare, but there's no effect on the health behaviors. Yeah. Now, with the caveat that we see some effects on healthcare, we see some effects on health spending. We followed those people, they have followed the people for 3 years. They see no effects on health. Perhaps after 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, they may see effects on health. We don't know yet. Okay, so that's the evidence in that direction. The evidence in the other direction is pretty clear that when we get variation in health and fairly plausibly exogenous variation in health, shocks hitting people, we see that impacting on acquisition of education, on income, and on wealth. So now, for a long time, we've known this evidence of causal effects of health on these socioeconomic characteristics. We've never really been quite sure about how important they are in the context of explaining economic inequality. And there are two publications this year that actually try to answer that question. How much does health inequality contribute to economic inequality? One of them looks at earnings inequality, the other one looks at wealth inequality. Now, these studies, what they're doing is they're building models. So they're building models over a life cycle where people are making decisions about how much to work, whether to work, and how hard, how much to work, and how much to consume, and therefore how much to save, and through their savings, how much they're going to acquire in savings, and then acquire wealth. Yeah. So people are making these decisions, but these decisions are interrupted by health dynamics, and they model the health dynamics by people can have a health type, a fixed health type. You know, some of us are robust, others are perhaps weaker in terms of health. And then there's going to be persistent shocks, like, you know, a chronic disease, getting diabetes, let's say, and there's going to be transitory shocks, like breaking a leg, yeah, which you recover from. And they allow these health dynamics to impact on the decisions about work and decisions about consumption through many mechanisms, yeah? Through productivity, through preferences, through eligibility for disability insurance, through medical expenses, and through mortality, life expectancy. So what do they find? The first study, the Husseini study, they find at the age of 55, if we were to eliminate health inequalities, so up to the age of 55, if we give everyone, and sorry, these are just males in the US, if we give all these males in the US the same health profile up to the age of 55, then the earnings, the cumulative earnings up to that age would be 20, the inequality in those cumulative earnings would be 28% lower. So that's a big amount of earnings inequality, which seems to be explained, according to this study, by health inequality. The second study by Denardi and others, they're looking at wealth inequality. They're finding at the age of 65, someone who is a healthy type, they have 65% more wealth than someone who's a less healthy type. What explains that? The two main, in the basic model, the two main mechanisms is through earnings and through medical expenses. And they find both play a role, but by far the larger role is through earnings. Yeah. The less healthy types get less earnings, and because they're getting less earnings, they can save less, they get less wealth. Yeah. But these two mechanisms don't explain all of the wealth difference by health. Yeah. And so they find if they extend their model to allow that these health types, there's a correlation between health and time preference, such that the low health types have stronger time preference, that is, they consume more now rather than later, then they can explain the rest of the variation. And that is actually most of the variation. Yeah. Okay, So, what do we know about the causes of health inequality? I think from in terms of socioeconomic determination of health, we've got theoretical reasons to expect that there's going to be impacts, but the evidence is rather ambiguous, with the exception of the impact of income on health in infanthood and childhood. In the other direction, health to socioeconomic characteristics, both the theory expects us to find effects, and we do find effects, and they seem to be important effects. Yeah. Okay, so what can we know about the causes of health inequality? Well, in particular, why are we not finding stronger, more consistent evidence of the socioeconomic determination of health? We expect to find it. Why are we not finding it? And I think there's various explanations, and two main explanations, and the sort of the usual explanations, sort of blame the measures and blame the data. And I think both of them are valid, and particularly sort of blaming the data. As I mentioned earlier, even this very good study, the randomized controlled trial, it was done for 3 years. We don't know what's going to happen in 30 years. So it could be that the studies, the observation periods, are just not sufficiently long to pick up effects of socioeconomic characteristics which impact on health with a very long lag. And we just can't get at that. So these are the typical explanations. Now, a less typical explanation is to think, well, you know, perhaps it's not the measurement, perhaps it's not the data, perhaps it's the theory. Perhaps the theory is wrong. Yeah? And we could go two ways there. It could be that the level of education, income, and wealth do not impact on health. Perhaps at least in countries with high social safety nets that have broken a lot of the links from by which education, income, and health can impact on health. Yeah? So that would be one sort of explanation. A more finer, perhaps refined explanation would be, well, it's not that these socioeconomic characteristics are irrelevant, but it's that the level of each one of them independently is not the relevant socioeconomic exposure. Yeah? And that takes me actually away from economics and towards the idea that it's socioeconomic position that is important for health. And this is a lot of what Natalie was talking about earlier, emphasizing socioeconomic position. So the hypothesis here is that position within society is important for health. Now, Natalie's spoken a little bit on that. Janet's going to follow me immediately. They are much better placed to tell you about the theories of why position within society may impact on health. So I'm not going to say anything about that. What I want to ask is, well, is this testable? Can we test this? Yeah. Now, the first thing I would say here is socioeconomic position. Well, at least to me, you know, naive economist, I would say this is not a very precisely well-defined construct. So I'm not entirely sure what it means. If I don't know what it is, how can I even conceive about an effect on health, a causal effect? And a second difficulty would be that we're talking about position. This is relative position. If I'm going to identify the effect of that, I want to change the position of some people, not change the position of other people, and see what happens to the health of the first group. Yeah, with the other group as a control. That's a standard setup for identifying effects. But we can't do that if it's position. If you change my position, change your position. So that's not feasible. So this is going to be a challenge, I think, to test this. Now, at this point, those of you who are readers of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy might recognize that SAP is an acronym also for somebody else's problem. Yeah. So basically the principle in life that, you know, you're not responsible for sorting out someone else's mess. Yeah. So, you know, so sociologists come up with this idea that it's position society that counts. It's going to be difficult to test that. Leave it to them to work out how to test that. Yeah. It's not for us to solve that problem. Yeah. So my colleagues within economics would probably say, stay clear of the SAP field. Yeah. So stick to estimating effects of separate, manipulable, absolute socioeconomic characteristics, each of those individually on health. Yeah? That would be the advice probably you'd get from most economists. Some of us might worry that, well, perhaps if we sidestep that SEP field, perhaps we miss the action, you know, and we want some of the glory, and we don't want to leave all that to the sociologists or the social epidemiologists, yeah? So we might miss effects of relative cumulative deprivation, which impacts perhaps multiplicatively over time, Natalie, is this yours? Okay, so we would miss these effects if we sidestep the SEP field. So, some economists, two very prominent economists, have actually taken a step into the field. And this is Anne Case and Angus Deaton, and their work on the opioid epidemic and deaths of despair in the United States. So for those of you that have not heard of the deaths of despair, this is people dying from abuse of drugs, alcohol, and suicide. Yeah, and here we're showing in the US, split by people who have a BA, a degree, a university degree in dashed, and in solid line, those without a university degree. And you can see for those without a university degree, we've got this huge increase in these so-called deaths of despair. Now, in trying to explain this phenomenon, Case and Deaton actually draw a lot on, more on the sociology literature than on the economics literature to explain this. And their explanation, I've not got enough time, so basically their explanation is about people losing economic status, but also losing social status within society. Sort of lower educated, lower skilled people, and this loss of position within society is giving them not only less resources that they can use to invest in their health, but also less motivation to invest in their health. Yeah. So I'll jump over that. So what can we know about the causes of health inequality? I think causal inference, if we're using statistical causal inference, that's very good at identifying effects within an observation period of the data of unidimensional absolute socioeconomic exposures. If the important socioeconomic exposures are not unidimensional, yeah, they're not absolute, but they're relative, and if they work multiplicatively, then it's not going to be so good at revealing these causes. Yeah. I will jump that, I think, because I'm running out of time. Okay, so what do we need to know about the causes of health inequality? And, of course, what I really mean here is what do we need to know in order to reduce these inequalities? Yeah. So we think about strategies that we could adopt to reduce these differences in health by socioeconomic characteristics. I think the most obvious one is to improve the socioeconomic characteristics, circumstances of the disadvantaged. So we intervene on the socioeconomic domain. We improve people's education. We improve their income. We reduce inequalities in income and inequalities in education. And that should improve health at the bottom of the distribution and reduce the inequalities. Now, for that to work, we do need a causal effect of these socioeconomic characteristics on health. And I'm suggesting at least getting evidence on that is going to be difficult. Yeah. An alternative strategy is to prioritize the health of the disadvantaged. So here we intervene not in the socioeconomic domain, but we intervene in the health domain. So you don't go after changing education, changing income, changing wealth. What you go after is changing amongst the poorer individuals, let's say, their access to resources that we know impact on health, for which we do have good evidence that there is positive effects on health. Yeah. So prioritization by socioeconomic status. Now, I anticipate a lot of objections to this, and I can think of four, all beginning in, and perhaps I've not got time to go into these. I've given my discussant a sneak preview of what these objections are and my answers to them, so perhaps we can get into that discussion. I'm going to focus just on the last one, that this may be considered infeasible. And it may be considered infeasible in the sense that it may not get political support. But if we do not have evidence that poor people are in worse health because they are poor, they are poorer, then perhaps society is going to be less prepared to prioritize the health of these poorer individuals. Now, we've been trying to answer, so basically the question is, what do we need to know about the causes of health inequality to know whether we want to reduce it? Yeah. So we've been trying to answer this and other questions and some studies we've been doing recently with Tom Van Oerte, a colleague, and Matthew Robson, another colleague, and Matthew is actually sitting here, and he's the brains behind actually the experiments that I'm going to describe to you briefly now. So what we're doing here is we're trying to understand people's aversion to health inequality, and also how strong that is, and also where it comes from. Yeah. So we have a study, which is an experiment. It's an online experiment done with a UK general public sample. And the participants allocate resources between hypothetical individuals. So they have a task, and they do this task many times. And in that task, they're faced with three hypothetical individuals. They've got a budget of resources. They've got to divide the resources between the three individuals. The resources impact on the health of the individuals. But the impact of the resources on the health can differ across the individuals. And doing that allows us, gives us, forces a trade-off between the participants who try to maximize the total health of the three individuals, or they could try to reduce the inequalities in health between the individuals. So we force them to make that trade-off, and the trade-off that they make reveals to us their aversion to the inequality. Okay, so in the first treatment we give them, the individuals are completely anonymous. We don't tell them anything about these individuals other than how productive they are at producing health. Yeah? So that identifies aversion to pure health inequality. So this is not socioeconomic, this is just differences in health. Yeah? So when we do that, what do we get? What we've got on the horizontal here is the share of resources which is given to any one of these three individuals. So if an individual gets an equal share, that's going to be 0.33. On the vertical axis, what you're seeing is the relative productivity of that individual. If they're all equally productive, that's also going to be 0.33. There's no differences between these individuals. You can see in that case, almost all the participants just share the resources equally. Yeah? There's no reason to do anything otherwise. If we move up from 0.33 on the vertical, then we're going to people who are more productive at producing their health. Now, if the participants wanted to maximize the total amount of health, they should give more resources to these individuals because they produce more health. And you can see very clearly, most of them don't do that. They give less resources. And that's revealing the aversion to inequality. And you can see also for the less productive individuals, they give more resources to the less productive individuals. What's the implications for health? You can see this is showing the health share on the right-hand side. Many of them try to equalize health. Some leave the people who are more productive also to have more health, so they don't completely eliminate the health inequality. So that's aversion to pure health inequality. What about this idea of prioritizing by income and giving greater priority to the health of people who are poorer? Is there support for that? Well, what we do is now in the second treatment, we tell the participants the income of these individuals and when they do the task again. Yeah? And when we do that, what I'm comparing here in any one round, there are three individuals, so we can rank them the poorest individual to the richest individual. And here I'm just looking at the mean health share given to these three types. And you can see that the poorest individual on average gets more than one-third share, and the richest individual gets less than a one-third share. So there is a slight amount of prioritization of poorer in the health of poorer individuals. Yeah. Now, what motivates this? Why do they do this? There's a few explanations. One explanation could be that people are concerned that income may be causing differences in health. They think that's unjust, it's unfair, and so they want to correct that injustice. And that's why they prioritize the poor. Now, that relies on people believing there is causality from income to health. Yeah? The alternative explanation is that people are concerned about overall well-being, or at least well-being that's determined both by health and by income. And they're trying to reduce inequality in that overall well-being. And in this particular experiment, they can do that by giving more health to the poorer individual. Yeah? And that would not require that they believe that there's any causal impact of income on health. When we give people, and we then extend the experiment to give them information also on the extent to which income does cause differences in health, do they change their allocations? Our basic answer is no, they don't. They seem to ignore that information. Yeah? Why are they doing that? Well, one reason they could be doing that is they really are concerned about well-being, and that's what they're trying to correct, so causality is irrelevant. A second explanation could be that they think income does cause health, but perhaps they are responsibility-sensitive egalitarians, and they think that people are responsible for their income. And so if someone has worked hard to get a high income and that allows them to have better health, then perhaps they deserve to enjoy that health advantage. Could be that they have that kind of ideology. In the third part of another paper, actually, we test out that hypothesis. And I'm running out of time, so I'll just tell you very, very quickly that we find some support for that in relation to beliefs about responsibility for income, but also an even stronger beliefs about responsibility for smoking. But we can come back to that in discussion if you like. I want to just summarize. So what do we know? We have weak evidence of the socioeconomic determination of health within adulthood. We have evidence that income in early life does have important impacts on health in infanthood and in childhood, and that persists into health in adulthood. Health's an important economic determinant of economic outcomes. We get feedback then between these two impacts, where health and socioeconomic characteristics can be interacting between generations and preserving inequality in both health and in socioeconomic characteristics over time. What can we know? I suggested the scope to know more is really limited if we think the important the health effects are dynamic. They emerge with long lag processes, and the exposures are multiplicative and multidimensional. What do we need to know? I would suggest we need to know interventions that improve the health of the socially disadvantaged. We need to know whether we want to prioritize those interventions, and we need to know whether that depends on what causes the health of the disadvantaged. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.